This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
And welcome to This Week in Wrestling, NWA On Demand. I am Pete, and I'm with the Sheedy-nominated, genetically superior voice man, Johnny Sorrow, for Best Voice. Johnny, how does it feel, man? How are you doing also?
I'm overwhelmed. I just got me thinking, just it reminded me of South Park. You know, don't you break down my Sheedy wall. And hopefully, if I win, Ally Sheedy will come over and blow me.
That's nice.
Hey, she's still a looker.
Hey, yeah, hell yeah. She's definitely a grandma MILF.
Grandma, maybe. But
what's next on the horizon? Taking down Mark Hamill?
I love Mark Hamill. Are you kidding me?
Okay,
yeah. Talk about a superior voice, Mark Hamill, who, by the way, is showing up as Trickster again. On Flash with Golden Age Flash played by John Wesley Shipp.
Yeah.
And for geeks like us to just go.
Yep. Even making the original series even more relevant, you know. Very true, very true. Yeah, but big shout-outs to the Titans of Wrestling getting an honorable mention. The whole entire conglomerate and the network getting nominated for producing great shows. I really appreciate all the guys out there, guys and gals out there, voting for the likes of for your favorites and stuff. And
hold on, get gals, come on.
I know. I got it. We have one who turned into pilot, so there's at least one listening. I bet you there's more. I bet there's at least five. And stuff, yeah.
Hello, ladies.
That's right. big thanks out there for the people who took the time to vote and getting behind behind the whole entire network and some of the talent and stuff. So we appreciate that. But hey, let's get on to NWA On Demand, Sam Houston Coliseum, Houston, Texas. We're opening up with Hacksaw Duggan versus Buddy Landell from June 4th, 1982. So at the time frame here, this is kind of Houston. It was kind of its own town, like we talked about, but they had used booking offices at one point earlier in the 70s and early 80s. They had they used pretty much world class, and was Gary Hart was the liaison there. And at this point, they've moved over to to Joe Blanchard's Southwest Championship Wrestling, and they're using talent from there, which Duggan was one of the big heels, was kind of Bruiser Brody's protege here at there. And we have a Buddy Landell pre-Nature Boy look. What were your thoughts here, man?
Well, I just thought it was interesting that we're getting heel Duggan and a babyface Buddy Landell with brown hair. And first of all, Buddy Landell as a babyface here, and it's beginning of his career, and he's, number one, he's jacked. Just jacked.
Yep.
And you can already tell that he's going to be great, but he is every generic babyface trope of the day rolled up into one. He's got feathered hair, like David Partridge,
yep,
or whatever. He does a lot of deep arm drags,
yep,
arm bars, and hits a drop kick. And that's what you do as a fired up young baby face. That's it. You know, that's your act. And he's got it down. And Duggan, you know, is a big rough heel bruiser. That's always fun to see heel Duggan back then. We also have a great crowd with someone yelling I love it when I'm experiencing other cultures, as it were. But there's someone yelling at Duggan that he's yellow. Yep. You're yellow. You're yellow. Yellow, I say. And I was like, I've never heard anyone ever say that in real life. Let me tell you, buddy, you're yellow. I was like, maybe in a John Wayne movie, but never in real life. So that was just great. Oh, by the way, your referee, Scotty from Boogie Nights. That's good to see. He's trying to work. he tried to kiss Buddy Landell, and he goes, Scotty, no. But Paul Bosch on commentary, he has got a million reasons as to why Duggan stomps his foot, and it's all hilarious. Like, at one point, he goes, it's the only way he knows how to count to four. he's like a horse, one of those trick horses. Count to four for me.
Wilbur?
Hey, Wilbur. I can count to four. They put peanut butter on Duggan's lips to make it look like he's talking. And he's talking about how to spell Duggan. And he goes, that's Duggan from New York. That's with two G's. Not New York. You don't spell New York with two G's. That's how you spell Duggan. Oh, thanks, Paul. I've been doing it wrong all this time. And also, when Doug is getting all rough and cheating, these are called New York tactics.
Yeah.
I loved it. I was like, yeah, motherfucker. But not New York City tactics. That's upstate New York tactics, because that's where Doug is from. He's not from
Glenn
the city.
Falls, baby.
Oh, yeah. But this was a short, fun match of two guys at the beginning of their career, one of whom was already a bit of a star in Duggan, and one who was unknown. And just think, 3 years later, Duggan's a fucking superstar, and Landell is about to piss away his career in Crockett. But it was just neat to see. I love seeing guys who became stars before they were stars.
I'm with you on that, too. And you also got to remember, Duggan is pretty familiar in the area because he played for SMU.
That's right.
And Texas bleeds football. College and high school football is the thing. I mean, here at UT, I mean, they draw sellouts every freaking Saturday there, and it shuts down the town trying to get anywhere.
Friday Night Lights, right?
Yeah, Friday Night Lights, man. Right. It's a big freaking deal. I mean, I remember in high school playing fucking high school football. We were like the kings and stuff, and I wasn't even a superstar. I was just a good tight end, and you got treated well. So I can imagine being known playing for SMU during when Dickerson and Roger Craig were around. So this is like during right when the Pony Express type of era and stuff. So Duggan had a lot of buzz around him. And it's funny.
I suppose where I'm from in New Jersey, where our quarterback went on to be the quarterback at Penn State, and nobody gave a shit.
yeah, there you go. The difference between the South and the North. Now, if he went to go play basketball somewhere, it'd probably been a different story.
I don't know. Like a team. You know what our school was all about? Wrestling.
Oh, really? Wow.
Oh, we were an amateur wrestling powerhouse.
Yeah, that's another northern thing. Yeah, it's not south. Mm-hmm. There's no amateur wrestling down south, really.
No, that's really the only sport that actually mattered at our school.
Oh, wow. All right. And speaking of, like, we were talking about the Flash earlier, here it's almost like a bizarro world where Duggan's the heel, and this is like Earth 5, Duggan versus Buddy, and Buddy's the face. Even Duggan, even when he's a heel, he shows a lot of charisma that would make him loved by the crowd, even to this day that he's loved by the crowd, and he just shows it here as a heel. I love right off the bat he goes for his big spear and misses. He has this like tiger by the tail energy to him where it just feels like it's about to explode, or you're holding the tiger and it's just like going crazy and you can't hold on to him. And that's the vibe I was getting off Duggan here. really fun bout. And then you see, like you said, Landell is total babyface. He's using those arm drags to keep the big gorilla off balance. But, you know, ultimately Duggan's strength is too much, and he uses it to his advantage. And he pretty much finishes off Landell with a kind of like a modified Oklahoma Stampede. It's pretty basic, but I thought Duggan's mannerisms, I thought, really carried this, where it made it interesting, and like you couldn't take your eyes off it, because Duggan's charisma, even at this young part of his career and as a heel, really just really, you could tell, just jumped off off the page there. And even though we know where he's going later in life, it's really like, even in the Magnum, he showed, like what we talked a couple, like last week, about Terry Allen, Magnum TA, he showed like flashes of the charisma. Here, Duggan really had it all, the charisma right then and there. It wasn't just flashes. He carried it throughout the whole entire match, wouldn't you say?
Oh, totally. And I just want to mention that finishing segment I really loved is with those arm drags. It was great, because he kept going to the arm, and it was like a point where Duggan's like, okay, I've had enough. And he just uses his brute strength. He just like picks the guy up, boom, slam, slam, Oklahoma Stampede, big slam, poof. You know, like, young Buddy Landell might be a better technical wrestler, but fuck it, I'm just gonna toss this jabroni around and use my brute gorilla strength, like you said.
Yeah, and he and then Doug's memory is really cool. It's like when I met him at a comic book convention, like it was like last year. Sometime, I think it was like last year in like January or February, I brought my Houston program book with me, and he signed a picture, but he started rifling through the pictures, and then like we stood there, it was about 5 minutes, and he's like, oh man, I'm sorry, I don't mean, no, I'm like, no, go ahead, and he had like a story, I can't remember, but he was like, oh man, there's Peter shows him Gino, and hey, look, here's Buddy before he was like the Nature Boy, and stuff,
awesome.
So it was just really cool, kind of, especially adds a little texture to now watching these matches on the NWA On Demand feed. It's just kind of cool.
He's like, I gotta go take a shit. Mind if I borrow your book, tough guy?
Oh!
Yeah. I'll be right here.
Exactly. Oh, man. And then we're going to move over to Lord Humongous versus Al Perez from December 13th, 1985. Do you have any weird Al Perez stories, Johnny?
Not really. I noticed that Al Perez, at this time, he's a bunch of people right around this time. This is like when wrestlers discover a new fabric or a new style, and you see a lot of them take to it. At this point, a lot of guys and down there in UWF, Mid-South, switched to these shiny long tight pants. Michael Hayes did, Al Perez did, a bunch of guys did. I was like, hey, check these out. All right, can I get a pair in black?
Yeah.
That's Al Perez. When he was in Crockett for that cup of coffee, I wasn't watching. I just he was always on the periphery for me.
Yeah, he was a guy. He always seemed like he had a decent look. He lacked the charisma, but he always felt like he could break out and be a star. And he had shots, like, in Mid-South, where he was a tag team champion. And, like, when the territories kind of shriveled up, he got a decent run in World Class. But one of my favorite stories is actually reading the Gary Hart book.
I know what you're going to talk about.
Okay, so, yeah, he was so obsessed with becoming world champion and didn't like his push. He decided he was booked against Ric Flair. I think it was in Florida. And he decided he was going to take that championship by hook and by crook, and was going to send up Stretch and Flair, which got Gary Hart so terrified. You know how bad for business, for not only for Al, but for Gary, they would have been fired. Gary Hart ended up having to go to the office, and they fired Al Perez before the match ever started, because I remember on Crockett TV, he was there, and then he was just gone. I remember they were pushing a match, like a tag match on TV the next week, and then he was just gone, and it was all because of him just becoming a nutcase and not realizing it's a, you know, it's not a it's not real, it's a work. And I always remember that story from the book.
I remember the story. I know certain people come out and said that it's not true, whatever. I want it to be true, so therefore it's true. But the best is that his reasoning is like, look, if I go and stretch them and, you know, or and really pin them, they're going to have to give me the belt and then I'm going to be a star. Like, even if you did that, you don't think they'd figure out a way, hook or by crook, to take that belt away from you and fire your ass?
Damn straight.
It's not like Jim Crockett's going, shit, I don't know what we're going to do. I guess Al Perez is the champ.
Yeah, I know. That's why Al Perez was the wrestler and Jim Crockett was the promoter.
He's like, I think I see a flaw in your cunning plan, Al.
Right. Now, what did you think of the Lord Humongous gimmick?
Well, number one, again, the movie The Road Warrior provided more inspiration for more wrestlers in the 80s than probably any movie ever. Because that's purely what this was.
With little Jason thrown in, obviously.
Oh, yeah, well, no, because he wore the hockey mask in The Road Warrior.
Road Warrior 2, yeah, right.
Lord Humongous is that character. I mean, every detail is the character from The Road Warrior. And when I'd see pictures of him in the magazines at first, I thought it looked kind of cool. But then the more I look at it, I'm like, I think what they forgot about Orotic Fungus in that movie, you know, that's there. So I look at him, I was like, that is one big, mean leather queen. And then it's like, how do you fucking wrestle in that hockey mask, too? Especially if you're a big, stiff, green guy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're going to throw this fucking hockey mask on top of you that doesn't breathe. You know, it's...
But it is a gimmick, wouldn't you say, that's really spawned a lot of, like, similar gimmicks? Like, when you think about it, like, he definitely was, like, the brainchild behind kind of, like, the Mankind gimmick and the Kane, and even to an extent the Undertaker in ways that this gimmick kind of evolved from. I mean, there's always been monsters, but this is one where, you know, they have the fire and the burnt face, and then even today they have Matanza and Lucha Underground is pretty much a...
Oh, I didn't... Lord Humongous was supposed to have a burnt face?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's the backstory and stuff, yeah.
I did.
But, you know, similar type of monsters with the creepy masks and stuff. I think Lord Humongous was one of the first ones who actually was a monster with a creepy mask type
of thing. Well, wait, what about Dr. Frank?
That's different, buddy. Totally different.
Why? Why is it different? It's a big, stiff, green guy.
I understand. But I've always loved the gimmick, and then one of my favorite feuds was him and Jake the Snake. And, yeah, and stuff. And him and Lawler were a lot of fun.
Now, which, because Sid also played a Humongous.
Yeah, that was later. That was in the Continental for Eddie Gilbert in 88, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Al Van Camp,
I believe.
Or Jeff Van Camp. Jeff Van Camp, that was his name. Who was actually a pretty good worker. Who was they always said how safe he was. Now Sid, on the other hand, who knows? What do you think of the match? I mean,
pretty much a squash. Yeah. You know, it's fun to see. I like, you know, Humperdinck's out there. You know, the finish was hard to understand. I don't know what exactly happened.
Yeah.
He's trying to put him in his Cobra Clutch. And they get into the ropes, and he's outside the ropes, and that Humperdinck kind of interferes, and they pulls him back in. They call for the bell, and it's a DQ, and Al Perez wins in 6 minutes. But most importantly, then he's beating up Al Perez, and here comes Jake Roberts, to clean house and rescue Al, and the place goes apeshit. We'll get into it with the match, but. Not enough can be said as to just how over Jake Roberts was as a babyface at this time down in Houston and Mid-South. It's nuts.
It really is. And another gimmick that I thought Humongous kind of helped was Demolition. You see a lot of Demolition in the Humongous character, too.
Yeah, because they also looked like big gay leather guys, too.
I wouldn't say that to Billy Eady or their faces, but that's neither here nor there.
That looked like it. I didn't say they were.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. Total squash, But the post-match with Jake was a really good piece of business. The one thing I will say about this crowd, though, is Humongous is beating the living crap out of Perez. But when Perez got a little comeback, the crowd went wild. Like, oh, yes, it's our chance, it's chance. But that was cut off real quick, and they went to the finish. I've never been a Humperdinck guy either as when it comes to managers. What about you? Were you a Humperdinck guy?
I didn't. You know what? I liked him more from when I read about him in the magazines, but I never really got to see a lot of Humperdinck. It was like when I first started watching Mid-South, he was on his way out.
Yeah.
And then that brief run managing Bam Bam in WWF, right at the time I was stopping watching, and a babyface manager is always stupid anyway.
Yeah, it's always terrible.
And I mean, not always, but in this case, definitely.
And then the Freebirds pairing was terrible.
Big Daddy Dink, yeah. Which I was watching WCW on and off. But that whole Big Daddy Dink and DDP and the Freebirds Rock Band show, I hated that shit so much. So I was just like, whatever. And so I'd like to see
the Florida stuff.
Exactly, the Florida stuff that he cut his teeth on, and that's where he got hot.
Where he got his rep, yeah.
I was like his look. Yeah, that's my kind of a manager.
Yeah, it was also a dumbed down Captain Lou too.
It's very inspired by Albano.
Yeah,
he's the Florida Albano.
Yeah, exactly. All right, man, let's take a break right here. We're gonna listen to Johnny, our friend from Pro Wrestling Only Board, Crossface Chicken, has recently passed away, and his family set up a GoFundMe, and Johnny does a really great piece here to help. Hopefully, you guys help out. Because he really meant a lot to a lot of people here, especially on Pro Wrestling Only. And then we'll hear some other shows you guys could be possibly listening to. We'll be right back.
All of us here at the PWO Place to Be Nation were saddened to hear of the passing of Adam Cech after a valiant fight against cancer. Adam had been a member of our little community for some time, and he will be missed. He leaves behind a loving wife and two young sons, and our love and condolences go out to them and all of his family and friends. During his battle, Adam had said that listening to the podcasts on the feed helped him get through some of those tough times during his fight. So we'd like to ask everyone out there to help lend a hand to his family. A GoFundMe page has been established for future educational expenses for his boys and to fulfill his plans for the boys to see a Packers game at Lambeau Field. Whatever you can donate will be greatly appreciated and will be put towards helping this young family navigate a future without Adam. Just head over to GoFundMe.com and put in Adam's Pack - Helping Adam's Family in the search engine, and please give what you can. Thank you.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And we are back. And we are back with kind of like a continuation right off this hot angle. We get a Jake Roberts versus a Rick Recksteiner, using his real shoot name, as you all probably know him as Rick Steiner from same show. Robert. Oh yeah, Rob Recksteiner, from December 13th, 1985, and the guy's jacked to the gills. Jake Roberts is just a super baby face here. What do you think of everything here?
Number one. Rob Recksteiner at this time. I remember this. He is so jacked. He's got fucking steroid back knee on his back that's just gross.
Yep.
And he's very green. And I remember him at this time actually having a match with Coco Beware on Mid-South TV that I really loved that ended with like this crazy power slam. But here he's with Jake, and they have, you know, an 11-minute match because Rick Steiner, they see something in him. They're going to be building him up. But Jake is super hot right now, babyface, and that crowd is so behind him. And I just want to mention, a lot's been said recently in our circles when people say, when you hear people always say that Jake Roberts was a master of ring psychology. And there's been people out there, our own Parv is one, saying, I think that's all a bunch of bullshit. I don't see anything in the way he wrestles that means that he was some sort of master psychologist. And I think people who are criticizing that aren't understanding the term. When they say Jake is a master of ring psychology, that's not kayfabe as to how he approaches wrestling an opponent. That's about all the little things he does to grab the crowd and make the crowd care. That's the psychology, is getting in the crowd's head and making them react the way you want them to react. And you see that in this match in spades.
Yeah.
Every little facial expression, the stuff with the pulling of the hair. Bosch is explaining that, you know, Jake has a t-shirt that says cruel but fair, which is awesome, you know, because he was a heel and he still does heelish things, but he's a hero now, you know, and if he does something heelish to you, you deserve it, which is great. Bosch really nails explaining that. But like when he's Rick Steiner, very limited at this time, he's going for a headlock, a chin lock throughout this, and it's Jake Roberts, all the little things, pointing to his neck and staring at the ref and getting the crowd into every little thing that he does. And it's all little things. It's the way his eyes bug out, the way he, like I said, points at an arm and everything. That's the ring psychology. No one else, I mean, very few people could do it like Jake did. That's what they're talking about. Because the crowd's already hot for him. And he just, I mean, it's in a front chin lock, he's building that crowd into a fever pitch. You know, that's ring psychology. That's what that means. That's what that's all about.
Yeah.
And when he finally hits that DDT, the place goes apeshit because he's been building to that point, building to it. And the way he reacts after hitting is another example of amazing ring psychology. Is he stands up. He doesn't go for the pin right away. He spins around in the adulation of the crowd, but he looks badass when he does it. Like, he just knows that he just killed a motherfucker, and he just rolls on top of him in a, you know, in a very cocky cover, gets the 1, 2, 3, rolls off and like points his fingers like, yeah, you don't fuck with me. And I'm like, that's ring psychology. Jake is a master. He's a master here.
He's the Sam Elliott of wrestling.
There you go.
You know, just cool. And I will say, I'm with you, Johnny, completely on the crowd psychology. I've probably seen, of all the wrestlers in my life, I think Jake Roberts is the guy I've seen the most wrestle. Maybe him or Duggan, between the two of them. I mean, I think I've seen both of them close to live times wrestling, maybe 20 to 25 times. And every match I've ever seen Jake work, it might not be the best match on the show. It was never the worst match on the show, but he would always do something in the match that you'd remember. It might be just a spot that he's like you were talking about, the headlock or the pointing of the thing. And there's times he'd work the match and he'd set up. He took the whole entire match to set up to one spot, and you remember it because he just laid the groundwork and weaved your way, and boom, you get that big pop because that's what he was leading it to, you know? It's not all about star ratings or how you work an arm. That's not all psychology is all about.
There's no, at all. With,
you know, yeah, and what he is he's realizing that to a lot of wrestlers, and it's proper. And one, it's about making money. Two, it's to make the crowd cheer the loudest. And it doesn't have to be all sustained, but for Jake, he's able to build it. It's like a good movie, just like his Hall of Fame speech. It was like it was like him doing a match when he did the Hall of Fame, you know? He went down, took the crowd back up, took him down, leveled him off, took him back up, pop! You know? And that's what Jake is such a master of. And
people are going to say, well, you're talking about crowd psychology. This is a fan-created thing. When Steve Austin on his podcast says ring psychology about Jake Roberts, that's what he's talking about. That's what they're all this is the disconnect between a certain population of fans and the professional wrestlers themselves. It's one of those things. Because people say, well, his matches were never the best match on the card. What's all this ring psychology bullshit? Like, no, you're not. You're approaching it the wrong way. basically. This match, a 10-minute match with a green Rick Steiner, and by the end of it, watching it at home all these years later, I got excited. The crowd's excited. I mean, that's how you do it. That's how it's done.
Yeah, and Jake Roberts, one of the most underrated facing perils of all time in tag team wrestling. I'm going to throw that out there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, again, it's all the same things he did in a singles match, but you do it when he's gaining sympathy, having to fight from underneath. And think about him working this match and trying to get to a hot tag. I mean, because this kind of felt like this is kind of what it was him in Steiner getting heat on him in a heat segment for a hot tag. Now, it was in a tag team setting. People might say, oh, that's a 4-star match on that heat segment, you know?
Consider the hot tag to be the DDT.
Yeah. That's exactly what it was, and I really enjoyed this. Steiner is like the just looks so freaking ugly. You know, the face that only a mother could love. I thought they got a lot out of the early armbar work. I thought because Jake's selling here was really on point, and again getting the crowd to care. And I think that's something you always stress on, and then that's a lot of people forget. It's not just what they're doing in the ring, it's how they're connecting to the crowd, and the crowd here is buying into everything they're doing here. And
his reaction at one point, his hair was pulled and he's in an arm twister.
Yeah.
And the way, instead of just selling it, he stands up and looks at the ref, and he's pointing at the ref like, what the fuck, come on, man. In a way that nobody else does.
Yep.
That way, it strikes a chord, like you said. It's like you may go out there and say, "Oh, so and so that they had a 5-star match with Moves." What am I going to remember? Jake Roberts is what I'm going to remember.
Yep.
And that DDT.
Yep. You know. And that's pretty much here. He gives Steiner most of the match. He sells and fights from underneath, and he does everything with gets the story over. Oh, my neck, you know, like you're talking about pointing the neck. He gets a little interaction with the ref that, again, the whole entire crowd's engaged to. But the whole entire point of this match was Jake's going over that DDT, and they build to it, and bam, he hits it. Crowd explodes, you know, babies go up in the air. Steiner, he gets some cred by going 10 minutes with Jake the Snake, and if only he could have avoided that DDT, Rick could have beat Jake the Snake, so he gets a little cred from, even with the loss. It was a loss that helped Rick Steiner in a way, and a match that still, you know, still keeps Jake looking strong in the territory to get ready for Humongous and showing him, hey, I have a weapon. For you, Humongous, come in, come mess with Mr. DDT, you know, awesome stuff, yes. Really.
And then we'll get to that, and we've talked about it and seen it, but the mask protects Humongous from the DDT, so we have that aspect, and then we finally get that match where Jake comes in wearing the hockey mask too, and it's such an amazing visual, it's such good stuff.
Yeah, just a smart worker, and just knows how to manipulate that crowd, man. It's just incredible. Next up is Dr. Death, Steve William, versus Ricky Gibson from, again, Houston, December 13th, 1985. Ricky Gibson is Robert Gibson's brother of the Rock and Roll Express fame, and one of the wrestlers, Jim Cornette, said it was one of the greatest wrestlers he's ever seen and one of the best wrestlers of all time. And here he's at the twilight of his career, but you could clearly see he's calling this match, because this was Memphis over here in Houston. This was a Memphis undercard match, and it was so damn entertaining and gives a whole different layer to Doc. Why don't you talk about it here, Johnny?
Well, this entire match is based around hair pulling and trying to get into a test of strength,
yep.
Basically. And it's great.
All great shtick, right?
It's all great. I think I call it shtick, and I don't think shtick. A lot of people associate the word shtick with something negative, and I disagree completely.
I totally disagree, yeah.
But people say, oh, that's their typical shtick. They weren't really working. They were doing shtick. Here's the thing. Shtick is working.
If it's done right, it's good shtick.
Yeah, but it's just as much working as doing a Fujiwara armbar. Yep. It's working. They're in the ring performing.
Getting a reaction from the crowd.
And getting a reaction from a crowd. And Ricky Gibson, it is funny, there's a segment of the crowd, and they're on the hard camera side on the right, who are not into Ricky Gibson, and they're into Doc, even though he's a baggy. Because Doc is showing a lot of charisma here, just like Duggan earlier.
Yeah.
And because there's a bunch of people there who are cheering for him. And these are the people who probably go to the matches, and they're like, look at – and Doc here is just a solid brick wall of muscle.
And let me interrupt you real quick for you. I think also 2 weeks from now is that Doc is going to be – this is 2 weeks prior to the big Murdoch DiBiase blow-off.
So they're ready to turn him anyway.
Yeah, so there you go. But, yeah, and so this might be a little planting of the seed of making him a little bit more likable.
Okay, and he is. He's likable. Yeah. Even though he's you know, cheating a little bit and being a dick. And Ricky Gibson, to this audience, they don't know who the fuck he is. And he looks like an older guy who – and at this point, if you wear that type of singlet in wrestling, you're a loser.
Yeah.
Wahoo McDaniel is the only one allowed to wear the double singlet thing. At this point in time, it looks like you associate that singlet with the guys who lose on TV every Saturday. But he's definitely calling this match. And the entire spot around the test of strength is great, because at one point Doc's, you know, he's getting outwitted by him a little bit here and there and frustrated some, but Doc's doing like, aha, you know, let's do a test of strength, little guy. And Gibson, the way he's like backing off a little bit, and he's reaching for the arm Doc has up, but then he puts it down and puts his other arm up, and then Doc goes for that and he puts it down, so he's taunting him, you know, and getting him mad, and the crowd's reacting, and Doc's doing the whole yelling at the crowd not to boo him,
yeah,
you know, that stuff too, with getting them worked up, and they had a fun little 8-minute match totally centered around shtick, and it works, and it's a ton of fun. It's fun is the operative word here. Yeah. This is a fun little match, and I've seen Ricky Gibson in Memphis, old Ricky Gibson in Memphis, and yes, he was awesome. Yeah, he was fucking great. And again, this crowd doesn't know who the fuck he is.
Yeah.
They don't know who Ricky Gibson is, and a few of them, a lot of them were into him, you know, just because. But then by the end, when Doc gets the win, you could just tell, like, people were ready to cheer for Dr. Death here, because he wasn't being a mean heel, he was being a goofy.
Entertaining,
heel. Yeah, and if he's showing a little goofiness, it's easier to turn him.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks, you know, he didn't come out. He wasn't stomping on Ricky Gibson's head or tearing at his eyes.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, you know, test his strength. He lifted him up and placed him in the corner, and he's waving him off while he's trying to piss him off. And then, this was a super fun. Not everything is going to be on NWA On Demand. It's going to be, and here's your 5-star classic again. It's going to be like, no, here's the full, the full experience of professional wrestling. You know, and this is what this is. And it worked probably on that card. I'm sure it was slotted perfectly.
Yep.
Just at the perfect time. And again, I highly, highly recommend it. You know, people are, you're not going to walk away from that going, well, I'm sure Meltzer gave that, you know, 18 billion stars. No, but you'll enjoy it.
Yep.
I guarantee you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, totally entertaining. I mean, it's a squash, but it's a lot of fun. You get what the Doc's doing. The shtick is like, I've never seen it ever happen. I've never seen Dr. Death. I mean, obviously his name does not scream out, let's do some comedy shtick. And it's not even straight comedy, but it's just comedy in how they worked it. And it just worked in spades for me here. I mean, they're doing the hair pull and he's yelling at the crowd and
he pulls Tommy Gilbert's hair.
Yeah, he pulls Tommy Gilbert's hair. He's covering, and then the crowd's on him and he's covering his ears up, which is fantastic.
And let me explain, for those who haven't seen it, the spot is he's trying to say that Ricky Gibson pulled his hair. So he grabs Tommy Gilbert's hair and pulls it to show him. And Tommy Gilbert immediately runs over to Ricky Gibson and grabs his arm that he's going to declare him the winner if you ever touch me again. So Tommy Gilbert was also a major part of this match. major part of this match. Without, and it's a hard thing to do for a referee to make himself a character in a match without it coming off obnoxious. Dick Worley. But Tommy Gilbert pulls it off. He pulls it off here. And Tommy Gilbert was a great worker in his day. He's part of this. It's a wonderful little match.
Yeah, no, I agree. And all the shtick in it was fantastic. And it just worked. And it was seen, and it was shown a whole other layer of Doc, which we never get to see. And it was just a super fun underneath match. Exactly. And I'm with you completely. And here we're going to take a little breather and hear some more shows on the network.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indy Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back, and we're here at our main event time, and it is Nick Bockwinkel defending his AWA title versus Dick Slater from Houston, April 16th, 1982. Slater here at the time was the Southwest champion, Southwest Texas champion, Southwest champion, Southwest Championship Wrestling, Southwest heavyweight champion. Yeah, he held that belt two times over here, and he was also a two-time tag team champion in the division, in the company, with Bob Sweden as a partner and Bruiser Brody. He just pretty much had kind of a cup of coffee here. It might have lasted maybe a year, because this is coming, because his big runs were always in Georgia, Mid-South, and Mid-Atlantic, and even later in WWF he had a little run. But this is one of those things where when you're trying to do research, no one ever really talks up his Southwest run. But now that we're getting the Houston footage, we're getting to see him actually have a lot of really good matches we've seen so far, and this is different. And I absolutely love this match. I gave it 4 stars. I thought it looked on paper, it looks like it's going to be a strong match, and it really didn't fail me. I thought they did a great job establishing things in the first fall that would carry over into the other two falls. The grappling I thought was fantastic early on, and Slater transitioning into the arm onto the arm was great, and he does this kick-ass looking key lock. And then it's like it starts getting personal with a slamming of the head into the mat, and then Bach transitions into the leg, and we see him hook on the figure four. And the thing I always mark out for when he does it, and he does it here, is Bach's Indian Deathlock, because you don't see it often, and it's just always been a sweet looking move. It goes outside, and Bach wraps the leg on the ring post. Slater stumbles back into the ring, and Bach kind of stuns Slater using kind of a whiplash on the top rope for the first fall, which I really dug that first fall, and I really like that finish because it's different. It's not like a knockout blow, but it's kind of like you stun him like with a little laser with the whiplash, and he's able to score the first pin, and I really like that. Slater is out for revenge, and he's doing some revenge spots on the leg in the second fall, and then he nails Bach with this really, really cool looking big elbow finish for the second fall. And the third fall is all quickness and all quick. Early in the fall, Slater's after the back, but in a finish that is used always, you see this is it's almost like a world title trope where it kind of keeps both guys protected, where it looks like Slater's going to score the pinfall and rolls him up. But the last second, Bach reverses it and grabs the tights and hooks the 1-2-3. I thought it was an excellent match, and there's a real good technical battle between two guys. And Bachwinkle is just showing what an awesome world champion he is here on the Houston footage. What did you think of the match?
It was really good. The one thing, it's just a difference in tastes. Is this is the kind of match that I watch and I recognize that it's really good, but it never grabbed me emotionally.
Right.
It's like when you watch a great movie that you go, wow, this was really well done, but I don't care about it. And I didn't. It just nothing made me care. But besides that, like you know what I mean? I'm still glowing in DiBiase Murdoch.
Yeah, that was personal and hateful. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You know, that's what I like. But
and we're both familiar with the angle, you know, to go with it, which helps a lot.
That's it. But I get this. The champion is in town, and he gets a title shot. I get it. And another thing, I've never really liked 2 out of 3 falls matches. I didn't grow up with it. Number one.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I can buy into that argument too, because sometimes the finishes seem a little clunky or cheap or too easy.
But there's a logic thing that bothers me with it, because it's like, okay, if this wasn't a 2 out of 3 match, these guys could fight to 45 minutes before someone could get a win. But if it's a 2 out of 3 falls match, it seems that makes it somehow easier for guys to get beat.
Yeah.
And that always kind of stuck out to me. But that being said, they did that. They did a 2 out of 3 falls here, and it made more sense the way they did it, the order on who got the pinfalls and how. So I don't have that criticism. Yeah, I was at first I'm like, oh, another 2 out of 3 falls, okay. But I'm like, oh no, they worked this really smartly to where I didn't mind it. You mentioned Paul Bosch here. Number one, first thing he says, Nick Bockwinkle with that huge belt. I love that he mentioned that, because it always stuck out that the AWA belt was gigantic.
It was. And then finally, NWA, when they finally redid theirs, they made theirs even bigger, you know?
Yeah, you know. It's say belt envy. And throughout this, the point is the winner is going to get the Junkyard Dog at the next big show that, according to Paul Bosch, is going to be stupendous.
Yeah.
Huge. He's like Trump.
Big anniversary show, yeah.
Except I like Paul Bosch. I'd rather have Paul Bosch be president, to be perfectly honest with you. And he's like, in my 50 years of doing this, there's never been a card like the one we're going to have. And he doesn't tell you what's on the fucking card until the end. Because then he reveals that Junkyard Dog versus Nick Bockwinkle, but also Gino versus Tommy Rich in a cage, and Manny Fernandez versus Mil Máscaras in a strap match.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, fuck yeah, okay. I want that card. Can we get that card, please?
Exactly. It's
loaded. Let's get that up. Let's get that, Bruce. I want to see Gino, Tommy Rich in a cage tomorrow.
Hell yeah.
And he mentions a Bach's dad, which got me thinking. Bockwinkle is one of those few second-generation wrestlers who was a far bigger star than his father. That's a rarity in wrestling. But he mentions Paul Dust. That I never knew this.
Yeah.
Yes, that Nick Bockwinkle's dad, Warren Bockwinkle, I believe.
Yep.
Lost his ear once in a match, and it was sewed back on. But that was back then, when that was very rough. But he still has his ear on his head.
You know, that's the second factoid I know about Warren Bockwinkel. The other one was that he wrestled Luthez back in the day. So now I have a second factoid that you can talk about.
But the fact that he had to clarify that his ear is... And the doctors, you know, back then, who knows? They could have put his ear, you know...
In his asshole.
On his foot. On his asshole, maybe. It's happened. Yeah. But luckily, they put his ear on his head where it remains to this day.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Speaking of JYD, Slater, ever since Slater just imitates the Funks, which Bosch also explains because he mentions that Slater was trained by the Funks. That makes, okay, that's why he wrestles like a Funk. He was trained by a Funk. Okay, that explains that away. But he was doing JYD spots.
Yeah.
The JYD's headbutts, the crawling headbutts.
Yeah.
Did that, and he knocked Bach down to the cold, 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 cold concrete. Did he mention that it was cold? I just want to get that out.
I think you said it was cold. Yes.
Didn't I think it was? It might have been cold. But Slater does one spot that I just loved, and when it, as you mentioned, got personal. They're both laying on the mat. And Slater's on his back, and he's going to punch Bockwinkel, and he does it by rolling. Like, he rolls off his back fist first into these big boom, and then rolls back, and then boom, and then rolls forward and hits these punches. I'm not doing it justice explaining it. You got to see it. It's definitely unique, and I thought it looked like great, desperate fighting. You know, like, oh, I'm exhausted in my back, but I'm going to have to punch this asshole. Oh, boom. And again, I watched it, loved it, nothing wrong with it. Bockwinkel continues to be awesome. You know, the more we see of him in Houston is more evidence of how fucking great Nick Bockwinkel was.
Yeah, you had great matches, yeah.
And you got to think, the stuff we see here of Bockwinkel, 82 up until he retires, this is the end of his career.
Yeah.
And he's heads and tails better than most everybody else in the business, and he's an old man.
Yeah, this is what Matt D's big talking point is. He goes, most of the footage we have on Bockwinkel is in his twilights when he's in late 40s and 50s, and he's tearing it up. Can you imagine what he's doing when his body's in his athletic prime 10 years ago in the 70s? And it's like, yeah.
Speaking of, he was in tremendous shape.
Yeah.
For a man his age, just tremendous shape.
Yeah.
In the match, it was great. I just said it didn't have any emotional grab to me. Like, you know, I'm like, well, yes, oh look, key locks and all that. Okay, you know me, mat work's not my bag.
Right.
You know, I don't hate it. I just not my bag. But I can't criticize this at all. It was a great match.
Yeah.
It just grabbed me on the emotion. It didn't grab me by my emotional balls.
Gotcha. Gotcha, man. Gotcha.
Whereas Dick Murdoch and Ted DiBiase grabbed me by my emotional balls and played ping pong with them.
Oh, shit. That's funny. All right, man. That's NWA On Demand this week. That's all the matches that were released this week. We got a wide variety of different things. We got some mat wrestling, some comedy. We got a squash. We got some match match psychology. We got to see the young star before they were stars match. A lot of variety, man. That's what's
a little bit of everything.
Yeah, you know, it's the three ring circus, baby.
I have to ask you this.
Yeah.
And I hope the answer is what I want it to be. Sam Houston Coliseum. Is it still the Sam Houston Coliseum, or did some corporation?
Oh, it's gone. Him? Yeah, it's gone. It's gone.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's gone. But yeah, man, this is NW On Demand. Remember, folks, you can get it $8.99 a month. You can get the first month free. Hell, that means it's Christmas time. It could be a pretty fun gift to give to your wrestling buddies. And by wrestling buddies, I'm not talking about your stuffed toys stuff. So, Johnny, anything you got to plug, man?
Actually, yes. Kelly and I recorded the other day. Part one of our latest Imaginary Stories podcast about comic books. We're talking about Spider-Man in the 60s. And it was going so long. As soon as we hang up here, we're going to be recording part two. But check it out. I know there's definitely a crossover between wrestling fans and comic book fans. So check it out. It's a lot of fun.
I'm probably going to check that one out. I'm a big Spider-Man. I used to, as a kid, I would collect the Marvel Tales.
We talk about that. Yeah,
which is just reprints of old Spider-Man comics.
The first comic book I remember ever owning was a Marvel Tales from like 1974. It had the power. You know, I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, cool. And he had the weird haircut. And I still don't understand Norman Osborn's hair.
Harry and Norman Osborn had the hair, but the Sandman had the same dumb hair.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
I won't give it away, but on the show we tackle the hard issues.
I was gonna say you speculate if they go to the same barber.
Well, apparently it was retconned years later by John Byrne that they're all related, and that's why they share the same. That Sandman shares the same dumb hair.
Oh, okay.
But we go hard and deep on the Osborn hair issue.
Nice. That is awesome. All right, man. We also recorded the Titans doing best promos from the 70s or best talkers from the 70s. And so that should be dropping pretty soon. So keep an eye out on that one. And follow me on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. Put down the remote. Plug in your computer. Watch some NWA On Demand, baby. See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile.
Okay, I know why that was in your head. For fucking Legend. See you later, Dominator. You don't realize really what you got till it's gone. And I'm not gonna sing another sad song. But sometimes I do sit and reminisce and think about the years I was raised. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again.
And everybody back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. But some days I sit and wish I was a kid again.